It's quite a rare opportunity for me to speak to so many of you in this type of setting. And so I'd like to devote the talk today to talk a little bit about myself, about my background, about my story. I'm sure many of you have seen me walking around the temple, you know, even before I was ordained as a monk. And a lot of you are probably wondering, after seeing such a young monk, you know, what's his story? You know, why did he become a Buddhist monk? So I'd like to spend the next 15 minutes or so just talking about my story and why I decided to become a Buddhist monk. Okay, so as many of you know, I was ordained at this temple last October. It was a very emotional ceremony for us. It was me and another nun by the name of Shan Jing Fa Shi, and she has now returned to Hong Kong. And the ceremony was a very emotional experience for the both of us. We had chosen Avalokiteshvara's ordination day as the day for our ordination. And I can tell you that every moment that passed during that day is still vividly present in my memories. I can still remember the fragrant scent of incense and flowers during that day. The flowers looked extra beautiful to me, and it was a very touching and very emotional experience. I will probably go on to remember that day as one of the major turning points in my life. The point that marked the biggest leap forward so far in my path of spiritual discovery. So I was born and raised here in Richmond to a Buddhist family. And so I was introduced to Buddhism at a very young age. Ironically though, my parents decided to send me to a Catholic elementary school in Vancouver. I suppose they wanted me to get exposure to other religions as well at an early age. So after I finished elementary school, I went on to attend St. George's High School, a well-known all-boys private school in Vancouver that's known for its elite pool of rich, spoiled kids and type A overachievers. Neither category was very good, but I believe I personally fell into the latter. So after I graduated from high school, I went to the US for university. I really didn't lose my craving for higher achievement, and so I decided to enroll at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, which is a school that's quite well known for turning out high-flying Wall Street investment bankers and larger-than-life business executives. And so in my third year of university, I got exactly what the school had advertised. I landed myself a very prestigious summer internship at an investment bank called Merrill Lynch in Hong Kong. I'm not sure if you're aware, but back then, before the financial crisis, investment bankers, they lived the high life. They would sport themselves with a custom tailored suit, fancy tie and all, and they would often be spoiled by these lavish corporate outings. And they probably earn more than they deserved. At that time, I thought that my life was going to be very promising. But beneath the facade of success and fortune that made this new lifestyle so attractive to me, also lay great danger. There's a good reason why they say you have to sell your soul to thrive in this industry. And I was really beginning to see why. working in a very high stress environment for almost 20 hours a day, frequently listening to verbal profanity and false speech, and ending long days at work with visits to the local bar and club just to try to numb the senses after a hard day's work. So it was a work hard, play hard mentality, and for some people, they ended up even playing with fire. And so at the end of that internship, I looked back and I began to question the morality and the meaning of what I had put myself through in those 3 months. Deep down, I knew that I had made the wrong choice, but my karma continued to pull me towards it, especially after they had given me a full-time offer for a permanent position after graduation. So it was actually my mother who saved me from it the following year after my graduation. So in May of 2009, after I had graduated from university, I learned that my mother's cancer had relapsed. And the cancer had started to metastasize into her vital organs. I know a few of you here knew my mother, like Lee and Bunny. They actually got to know her quite well. But for those of you who don't know, my mother was one of the founders of this Buddhist temple. And other than the venerable, is largely responsible for everything that you see at this temple here today. She devoted her whole life to this meaningful project, and without her contribution, you would not be seeing such a beautiful place here, with such beautiful, exquisite buildings and majestic statues. So, anyhow, after I had graduated from university, my mother's critical condition forced me to put aside those career plans, and so I came back to Vancouver to be with her so that I could care for her. And it was during this period that I started to become more spiritual. So not long after, the doctors here decided that she was too ill for treatment, and so they started to refer her to palliative care. And we didn't want to give up. We wanted to continue to fight on. So out of desperation, we reached out to a family friend in China who was able to connect us with a hospital in Shanghai that was willing to treat her. And so we were on the first flight out of Vancouver, and we arrived shortly in Shanghai. And not long afterwards, my mother started her treatment. During this whole process, my family and I, we never gave up in our prayers, and it was also during this time that I noticed my spirituality beginning to grow. It wasn't long before the treatment that my mother took on miraculously seemed to work, and she started to feel better again. It was during that time that she encouraged me to begin my job search again. And so I did as she told, and I began to look for another job. I knew that investment banking was not going to be the right fit for me. And so I decided to look elsewhere in my field of finance, and I ended up finding a job at an investment fund in San Francisco. And it was a dream job for me, the job that I had been waiting for all 4 years of my life, studying at university. As we all know, the nature of life is very impermanent. And 1 month later, my mother fell sick again. And I rushed back to Shanghai to be with her. But by then, the cancer had already spread throughout her body. So what happened next was what I believe to be my spiritual epiphany, which led me to this path of ordination. So it was on the evening of April 13th, 2010, and I'll always remember what happened on this night very vividly. My sister and I were by my mother's bedside. She was in a very critical condition in the hospital. Her vitals were getting weaker, and she was struggling to stay with us. And so it was during this time that my sister and I started to chant Avalokiteshvara's name by her side, knowing that the time had come for her to leave us. So in the mid-evening, after she had battled cancer very courageously for over 8 years, my mother passed away in the Renji Hospital in Shanghai. So not long afterwards, in the first few hours, my sister and I, obviously we were filled with grief and sorrow, and we really struggled to hold our tears back as we chanted for her. But somewhere in that third hour after her passing, something completely unexpected happened. The sorrow that we had been feeling suddenly turned into jubilation. And there was a deep sense of joy and bliss in our hearts. The feeling was unlike anything I had ever felt before. And my sister felt exactly the same way. So it was this remarkable feeling that was also accompanied by mental images and thoughts of Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, coming to receive my mother and leading her to a much better place. It was at this moment that I also heard my mother say to me, she had already passed away, but I heard her say to me in my mind, she spoke in Cantonese, she said, "You sao hang, mo zhai shan si gan, ge da, zhe zhong yu de you sao hang." So it translates into English as, remember, spiritual cultivation. Don't waste your time any longer. The most important is spiritual cultivation. So after I had heard those words, the joyful feeling that I'd been experiencing gradually subsided, but I still felt a deep sense of peace and well-being, well until the 8-hour window had passed after she had left us. So looking back, it was really this illuminating experience that inspired me to take a new path. It saved me from falling into the pursuit of fame, wealth, and glory. And it was what motivated me to come back to this temple to take on a new goal in my life, which would be spiritual cultivation. So I came back and I started my work here. Outside of my role as administrator, I would spend a great deal of time studying the Buddhist philosophy. I would regularly practice meditation and chanting. I started to read and chant the Diamond Sutra, and I studied many of its commentaries as well. It was actually the Diamond Sutra that really opened up my mind to what the Dharma was really all about. It talked about non-self, emptiness, impermanence. And I began to understand that the Dharma is essentially a solution to this problem of existence. You know, all human beings think that they exist as independent and endearing entities. And as a result, they selfishly run after all these things that are all dependent on conditions, all subject to impermanence. And because they believe that this is what leads to their happiness, they become attached to it. And they become reluctant to let go of it. And so that's really the cause for our suffering. After I had spent a number of years here with my work at a temple and studying Buddhism and meditating, I noticed that day by day, my spirituality began to grow. And I would regularly spend my weekends and my evenings sitting in meditation. I would be reading a lot more on Buddhist sutras and reading other Buddhist books. I started to practice Asubha Bhavana to curb my desires. And I once actually even went through the trouble of having to explain to a Canadian customs officer what I was doing with a model skeleton in the back trunk of my car as I was crossing the border. So I had to explain to him that I bought it in the US from a medical store because I wanted to use it to work on my Buddhist practice, which involved contemplating on the impurities of the body. And the model skeleton was one such representation of it. And so as I became more devout in my practice, I began to realize that the Dharma is not something that is just available in the Buddhist sutras and in the sermons delivered by the great monks. I began to realize that if you do something with great intensity and you have a real interest in getting to the truth of the matter, then you would arrive at the Dharma. So my foray into the world of triathlon was one of the things that actually ended up giving me great insight into my own spiritual practice. As some of you may know, especially those who have taken part in marathons or other endurance races, training for a triathlon requires an enormous amount of discipline and persistence in your physical training. It also requires a tremendous amount of willpower to overcome all sorts of physical discomfort during your training and your racing. So I was really amazed at the sheer number of hours and the intensity these triathletes would put in to train their bodies to be healthy and fit, all to take on this demanding physical challenge. And in the course of my training with them, it began to dawn on me that while so many people would spend so much time to train their bodies, their physical bodies, to be healthy and fit, how many people would actually take the time to train their minds to be healthy and happy? So after 1 year of triathlon racing, I decided that if I wanted to make the biggest progress in my Dharma practice, that I would need to turn pro. And that for me meant becoming ordained as a Buddhist monk. And so it's been almost 1 year since my ordination, and the transition from layman to monk certainly was not easy. I had its fair share of obstacles to overcome. But I knew that with any meaningful pursuit that you take on, you have to make sacrifices. Albert Einstein, he summed this up very beautifully when he said, I must be willing to give up what I am in order to become what I will be. There can be no success in life without making the right sacrifices. I knew that if I wanted to follow in the footsteps of the great monks and the great Bodhisattvas, that I needed to give up all the attachments. I needed to give up all the sensual pleasures. And I knew that if I wanted freedom from samsara, then I would have to live a life of renunciation, that I would have to let go of all these attachments. And so it's been almost a year now. It's still very early in my journey. And I know that there will be a number of obstacles to overcome in the future. But I do feel very blessed to have gone this far. And I'm very excited about where this path will take me in the future. And so that's my story. I hope everyone enjoyed listening to it and is able to perhaps take something out of it as well.